Are you feeling under siege?
I am a bit, from lots of directions.
Including the other side of the desk today.
Yes, that's right.
That would be because of my column in the Fin Review on the weekend.
Yes, about e-bikes and e-scooters.
And
as you know, I'm a very proud owner of an e-scooter. I love my e-scooter.
Yeah.
And against all the odds, really, because that was a surprise present from you, I think, Christmas before last.
Yeah, you came back and you'd met a friend who scooted around in her e-scooter and got the train so far to work and then used the e-scooter. And it was 2 or 3 weeks before Christmas and I thought, oh my God, that's a hint. It's such a clear hint.
And it wasn't at all. No, it was just, I was saying, oh, how interesting that she's got an e-scooter.
And then when you opened the parcel.
And this huge parcel, and I thought, what on earth can it be? And when I saw it was an e-scooter, I thought, what on earth would I want with an e-scooter?
And now?
And now I wouldn't live without one.
There you go. There you go. So that's what the argument for. The argument against is they have a tendency to burst into flames.
Oh, only a minute proportion of them, do you mean? Come on.
Okay, well, we'll be talking about that today. We'll be talking about electric cars today. And we'll be talking about how important it is to go to your first AGM. Plus, because we had the Strata Commissioner on last week, we didn't do our lock up and leave. So we'll have a lock up and leave at the end. A lot to look forward to. I'm Jimmy Thompson. I write the Flat Chat column for the Australian Financial Review.
And I'm Sue Williams, and I write about property for Domain.
And this is the Flat Chat Wrap. E-scooters, Sue.
Yes. Well, I mean, it's a bit worrying that there have been a few fires.
There have.
Mostly e-bikes, not so much e-scooters.
True.
There was a news thing the other day that said an e-scooter had burst into flames. And then when they actually came to the track on the news bulletin, it was actually an e-bicycle.
Yes.
And I mean, the two are a bit different.
Very
People
different.
People use them very loosely.
Well, you know, one of the big differences is that the battery on an e-bike can easily be removed for recharging purposes.
Oh, right. But an e-scooter, it's quite hard to remove the battery, isn't
well,
it?
Well, it's not a standard fitting to have a removable battery. I'm sure some of the bigger ones, the really fast, really illegal ones, they might have removable batteries. But it seems to be it's that connection element. What these fires are caused by, they call it thermal runaway. A short circuit which causes overheating in the battery, or overheating in the battery causes a short circuit. But basically, it's a cycle that very rapidly gets out of control. And there have been instances of the lithium ion batteries reaching temperatures of 700 degrees centigrade in fires.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, because the thing is, you kind of think, well, if you have a fire extinguisher nearby, that might help. In fact, I mean, from pictures I've seen of the fires that have been caused, I mean, they explode with such ferocity, you wouldn't be able to get anywhere near them to use a fire extinguisher anyway, would you really?
Not really. The fire extinguishers are handy for the things that the burning battery sets alight to. So it's not just going to go alight in isolation. But it does seem to be a thing of lack of care. Of the battery. I mean, it's the short circuit. The short circuits are caused by inappropriate use of the battery, letting the batteries get too flat, letting the batteries get overcharged.
Too flat?
Yep.
Okay. I know overcharging is really bad. I didn't realise there was a problem to when they were too flat because, like there are some battery appliances, it's good to run them down from time to time and then start them again, but obviously not with
Lithium ion actually likes a bit of a recharge in the middle. It doesn't have a memory like old-fashioned rechargeable batteries used to have a memory. Lithium ion apparently works well on a mid-cycle charge.
So kind of top-ups all the time.
Yeah, but the problem is that we're talking about apartments, but you know, near us, there is a couple of backpacker hostels, and outside them, you see a stack of e-bikes chained to the railings. The batteries are obviously inside being recharged. That would be my first concern about the potential for loss of life in a a battery fire. Mm. If you've got half a dozen backpackers and delivery riders staying in a hostel and exchanging chargers where one charger might not be ideally suited for the battery that's being recharged, that's where I can see problems happening. Mm. And it was a hostel here in
King's Cross. Where there was a big fire from an e-bike. Yeah. No, I can see that. But then a lot of strata owners or strata residents, you kind of think an e-scooter or an e-bike are really handy to get around because lots of apartments are near train stations. Yeah, so therefore you can just get on the train with your scooter or bike. And then at the other end you can go wherever you need to. So it's really, really convenient. So you kind of think they're going to take off. The difficulty is in New South Wales, they're still illegal.
Yeah.
But in many other places, I mean, in Victoria, Melbourne, in Adelaide, in Canberra, we've ridden e-scooters in Melbourne and Canberra, you know,
the kind of
communal ones. Yeah. It's great. So at the moment, New South Wales, we don't have that many e-scooters. When they get made legal, which surely they have to be, at some point, then there may be a lot more, and then there may be a bit more danger.
But you wonder which way it's going to go, because the local government, I know that City of Sydney decided not to participate in the experiment with the, you know, the hired
communal ones. Yeah.
And maybe they will be looking at these stories and going, we don't want to encourage this. We'd rather keep them illegal because, I mean, it hasn't happened to you and I haven't seen it happen to anyone else, but you could easily be stopped riding along the pavement and be told you that's illegal.
Absolutely. But it's funny, the other day I was waiting at a traffic light. I was on the pavement. I was waiting for the traffic light to change and to cross over, and there were three policemen next to me. And I thought, oh, gosh, I've got my scooter here. They could easily book me. And then I thought, I'm just going to cross the road because there was no traffic. And then I turned to one of the police officers and said, if I just jaywalk now, you're not going to book me, are you? And he just laughed and said, no, go ahead. And maybe he didn't even notice the scooter. So I don't think they're particularly bothered about booking people unless they are a menace. I met a guy the other day with his scooter, and he had been warned by a police officer once, but for not wearing a helmet.
Right.
But I always wear a helmet anyway. Yeah. So maybe they're kind of more about safety
of
than
the user.
Else. And also, if somebody's riding quite dangerously too fast on the pavement and pedestrians just have to scatter, I mean, that might be a case in which the police might do something. But I think, I mean, I ride very carefully. I have had one little accident where I ran over somebody's foot at a bus stop. But she was sitting in the dark. It was in a shadow.
Right.
She was very nice about it. Obviously, I stopped immediately and I was effusively apologising.
Right.
And she was great. But generally, well, I'm always really careful around pedestrians.
I was just thinking about e-bikes and wondering, you know, we see them flying around here in King's Cross, which must be delivery bike central in Sydney. And I wondered about, well, don't they need a motorbike licence because they travel just as fast as people on motorbikes. And then I thought, well, maybe there's a limit, and there is a speed limit for e-bikes that everybody ignores, which is 25 k's. But the real significance, apparently, is do they have pedals, like the old mopeds?
Oh, yeah.
And is it an electrically assisted bicycle rather than a motorized bicycle?
Okay.
So if those pedals were not able to, just for show, then it would be illegal unless they had a motorbike license or a scooter license.
Interesting. I hadn't realised that.
But, you know, I don't know if it makes a lot of difference, but you don't see a lot of pedalling going on in these guys on their bikes. I remember being in France years ago and being amazed. The French love their mopeds. This was a little 30-odd years ago. But they used to ride around, they'd put their feet up on the front strut behind the front wheel.
Mm.
So they didn't pedal at all. They just motorized around. But those batteries are being taken out now. What does that mean for strata?
So maybe with strata, they could have regular inspections of e-scooters and e-bikes.
By whom?
By the building manager, if there is a building manager, or
and how's the building manager going to know what's safe and what's not?
Yeah, because basically you want to make sure that people have the right batteries with the right scooters or e-bikes, don't you?
Yes, like, and the right chargers.
Yes, they shouldn't have cheap imported batteries that
because they lost
generic,
one in their last backpacker hostel.
So they need to have that. But how can you inspect them? Well, I guess maybe you have a rule to say that people have to have the original batteries or a replacement battery that actually goes with the vehicle.
How about if you said to people, if your e-vehicle causes a fire, we discover that you used inappropriate attachments or whatever, or you left it charging for too long, all of these things can be proven, then you will be held liable for the damage caused.
But if it is somebody like a delivery rider, they might not have very much money anyway.
That's true.
So that's the difficulty. And I mean, the idea is to get people, not to kind of retrospectively punish people, but to get people to act more responsibly in the beginning. And some people may not realise that it is irresponsible getting in a cheap generic battery. So, they might not realise that.
So how about you register your scooter or your e-bike with your building and they hand you a piece of paper that says how to look after your battery?
That sounds a good idea.
That would be a start, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Because, how about asking them to be insured?
Yeah, it's a possibility as well. Because another thing, apart from having the wrong batteries and chargers, is people who ride badly and they bash their battery. Like with an e-scooter, your battery is underneath your the platform you ride on usually. So I've seen people bashing up and down steps.
And curbs and things like
that. Yeah, that's right. And, you know, that's probably incredibly bad for the battery.
Yeah.
So maybe a few rules around riding as well.
Somebody's invented an anti-combustion gel that you build it into the battery and you put it around the battery components. And if the battery starts to heat up, the gel melts, I think, and then seals off
the
electrical components, and so it all calms down.
So when's that going to be readily available for us all?
Who knows? Who knows? Mm. Could already be check it out on eBay. But it's the battery manufacturers. They're the ones who would have to pay extra and charge extra to have that installed in the battery when it's being manufactured.
But there's so much bad publicity about them at the moment. They might think that that's a worthwhile expense to go to.
And it could be that at some point the authorities, wherever they might be, will say, you can't have an e-bike or an e-scooter unless you've got this kind of battery attached.
And I know in your column you mentioned how some buildings are looking at having a safe room where you store your e-vehicles and where you charge them as well. So if there's any problem, it can be sealed off.
Yep.
Maybe that's a really good idea, or some rules around where people can charge their vehicles as well. Because, say, like I charge mine on the balcony because then I kind of reckon that's a bit safer.
Yeah.
And then in a
safer
in
for
the
us.
Bedroom.
Shame about the people upstairs, but
surely it would be safer, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Absolutely.
So maybe there could be some rules about that kind of thing as well.
Yeah. But I think the other thing that's been suggested is that you should only charge your battery if it's plugged into a timer. You know, timers for lights and things. Mm. So you've got to have a timer that will immediately, you know, will automatically shut off the electricity after 2 hours or whatever.
Mm.
And that would cut down the risk.
That's a really good idea. I want one of those timers whenever I run a bath as well, because I always forget I'm having a bath and then I suddenly remember and there's water.
You see the water lapping through from the bathroom and think, oh, yeah, I've forgotten something.
But no, that's a really good idea, an electricity timer.
Yep.
Mm.
Yeah, that could
smart.
Work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so we mentioned electric vehicles, and there's a big New South Wales government initiative at the moment to assess buildings for putting in electric vehicle charging, and you can get a grant. So we'll talk about that after this. Yeah, so while everybody else is getting worried about electric scooters and bicycles blowing up, the New South Wales government is ploughing ahead with its plan to get more electric vehicle charging points in apartment buildings.
And this is for e-cars?
This is for cars, yes.
And do they not? Well, they can blow up as well, can't they?
Now, to be fair, statistically, there's more chance of a petrol-driven car causing a fire than an electric one. But the what really dangerous ones are the hybrids that have got both a battery and a petrol in it. Just if they go up, they really go up.
But how many of them go up? Is it
not
like
many? I mean, it's just
one in a million.
Well, I don't know if those are the statistics, but that sounds quite specific. But one in quite a lot is probably more accurate. But now the government has got this thing, and there's a webinar. There's a thing about it on the website on the 18th, I think it is, or it's certainly next week, maybe it's the 15th. And you can go on that and they'll tell you all about the latest stuff about EV vehicles, EV charging. But you can apply through Smarty Grants, which is a funny name for a serious
organization. Isn't it, really?
And you can apply for a grant with them, and they will come around and assess whether your building is suitable for EV charging or if there are suitable spots for EV charging. And then if there are, they've got $10 million, which actually doesn't sound like all that much, but they have $10 million to do a 50-50 installation with the owners' corporations. So that's good.
Yeah. What did you say the company's called?
Smarty Grants.
Okay. I thought you were going to say Smarty Grants, and I was going to say that doesn't work, does it? Because it's like it rhymes with Smarty Pants, Smarty Grants.
You mean it rhymes with Smarty Pants? Smarty Grants.
Okay. It's a good name. Good
it
name.
Is.
So that's a really handy thing for buildings to get in early and see if they can get in there and get some advice.
So, and again, you know, look, you mentioned the car that went on fire. I think there was one at Sydney Airport which took out, it was in the long-term car park, and it took out four cars sitting near it. But that battery had been disconnected, and that was the problem. Somebody had disconnected the battery and left it. And this is the thing about the battery running flat. And then you get the short circuit and it just starts. All it needs is a little bit of excessive heat. Or maybe it was because the other thing about batteries, and if you have an e-bike or an e-scooter, don't leave them in hot sunshine. Same rules as dogs and babies and cars apply to electric vehicle. Well, scooters and bikes, don't let them get too hot in the sun.
Right.
Because that may trigger the thermal runaway that we were talking about.
Yeah, and I got caught in the rain once in a terrible thunderstorm, and my scooter got really wet, and it kind of, when I got home, I sort of just left it, hoping it might dry off. And in the middle of
this is how fires start, by the way.
Yes. In the middle of the night, suddenly this red light filled my bedroom and it was flashing red light. And I thought, oh, my God, it's a police car. Well, that's bizarre.
How did it get on the 50th floor?
And it was just all these flashing lights and it really scared me. And then I woke up properly and went out and saw it was my scooter. All its lights were flashing.
Right.
The headlight, the stop light, everything. And I thought, oh, my God. But then it seemed to dry out and it functioned well. But, yeah, so, yeah, it can be a bit difficult.
But I do recall seeing somebody riding around in a scooter just like yours with cling film over the little control panel at the top.
Yeah, maybe that's a good idea.
To keep it, you know, because of the rain, you have to carry a roll of cling film around with you.
So if you see me coming, just give me a wide berth.
Which you could explode at any time. And people think that e-scooters are, you know, like toys and they're essentially unsafe. But I remember when you got yours, the lock is actually your mobile phone and it wouldn't let you ride it until you had sat through a video on the mobile phone, a safety video.
Yeah.
And only when you had played that safety video would it then unlock the scooter. That was really clever and really responsible.
Yeah.
When we come back, talking about responsible, we're going to talk about going to your initial AGM. That's after this.
Jimmy, a couple of weeks ago, you were talking about an apartment off the plan and how you'd been through the paperwork and discovered there were a few embedded networks or embedded
little anomalies
in all the contracts. And so you were going off to go to the AGM to raise those.
Yes.
So how did you get on?
It was interesting. We had a pre-meeting. One of the other owners organised about, a dozen people. And we met in the pub and had a chat about what we wanted and what we didn't want. But in the meantime, there had been a bit of publicity in the paper and people had put two and two together because I never named the apartment block for obvious reasons and some less obvious reasons, but somebody else did. And so the owner, the developer, was getting quite concerned about some of the negative responses that they were getting. And I don't know if that affected the way the meeting went, but when I got there, first of all, there were a couple of people at the pre-meeting who were saying, the developer just wants to do the right thing, you know, we don't need this to be a big conflict, whatever. Okay. And I got to the meeting and the developer turned up and we'd been told that he wasn't going to use his votes.
Because he had more votes than anyone else, didn't he?
He had just a couple of votes less than all the people at the meeting put together.
Oh, okay.
But there were a couple of people in the owners group who were in favour of the developer, so he could probably have knocked over anything that he didn't like. Some of the things that did get knocked over or certainly postponed are going to cost the developer money because they were embedded networks that were designed to transfer the cost of installations from the developer to the owners by devious means. And these are just, these days, that little rort is so commonplace that they're just accepted as standard practice. And I have to say, strata managers just go along with this stuff. And they have a code of conduct in New South Wales that says they're never going to give owners advice that is detrimental, you know, to their financial well-being. Well, that is putting that in an agenda, promoting it as something they want to do, that we should be doing, is breaching their own code of conduct, as far as I'm concerned. Now, I've heard from very high up people in Strata Community Australia that they are not in favour of embedded networks. Well, do something about it then. Tell your members not to support it. Tell your members to go to an AGM and say, we do not recommend that you support this. But of course, they make more money out of setting up strata schemes than they do out of managing strata schemes. Are they going to shoot themselves in the foot with developers saying, well, if you're going to say that at our meetings, we're never going to hire you again?
That's right. It would be handy if contracts were quite standard, wouldn't it?
And then
you could have a section called embedded networks, and then they could list the embedded networks, and then there'd be some degree of transparency. And owners then could decide whether they were happy to go along with it.
Yeah. Anyway, so we got to the meeting and I'd taken a beta blocker, so I was incredibly calm. And and there was things that it just amazed me that people would get up and we'd say, why have you got a 10% increase annually in the contract? And they were saying, well, we won't impose that. We won't charge you that.
This is the people operating the...
In this case, it was the stormwater drain people. And they say, oh, yeah, it's in the contract, but we wouldn't impose it. Yeah, well, why is it in the contract then? Oh, don't worry about it. Yeah, but I do worry about it. Yeah, it's fine. Nah. You know, if we approve this contract, the next guy to be standing in front of us, yeah, a 15-year contract. I think he lost the room, this guy, when he said, hey, we could have got a 25-year contract if we wanted, just like we have in Queensland.
Oh, wow.
I could sense the people in the room going, what?
Yeah.
So we got everything through, or stopped everything going through that we wanted to get stopped. But here's the thing, it occurred to me, right, there must have been about 40 or 50 people. You've got 60 units, right, in the complex. At the beginning of the meeting, they have to declare who can vote. And the developer had 23 votes. Now, that was a combination of apartments that he retained for his own family and others that hadn't been sold yet, or certainly the sales hadn't been completed. So he had 23 votes. There were 25 people, individual lot owners there.
Mm.
A very, very tight margin. Now, the strata manager who ran the meeting said, this is an amazing turnout. Yeah, he said, I've rarely see so many people at an initial AGM, and it's very gratifying to see that. And it made me think, what is it like at these other AGMs where people turn up like in half those numbers and the developer just sits there and goes, well, I've got more votes than you, so you can do. And people just don't turn up. I mean, you've got 20 people almost who didn't turn up or send proxies to that initial AGM, just because people think, and you hear this so often, and it goes back to when we first bought off the plan, people assume that if something is so wrong, the government would not allow it to happen. And you you don't realize the government just seems to not really care that much, or they're very slow to act. Airbnb was a classic example. That's something where business and profit was moving very, very fast, and governments were moving ponderously slowly. And they were always behind the game, to the point now where they are saying, oh, we need to do something about Airbnb. And all these people who have got Airbnb as the source of income are going, hang on, why didn't you say this before? We've put money into this. We've invested a lot of time and money, and you should have mentioned, you should have said something before. And that's how it works. And this is how it works in Strata, that the government just moves too bloody slowly, and they won't try anything. As we were saying to John Minns last week, why don't you just try something? Rather than waiting until you've got the perfect solution, try it. And if it doesn't work, stop trying it.
Yep.
But that's how Strata works. So to get back to initial AGMs, turn up or send a proxy or do something, because this is the point where all these contracts, which might be good or they might be dodgy, they all contracts stop at the start of the initial AGM, and they have to be approved or otherwise during that initial AGM. And once you've got that contract in place, you're stuck with it. And especially if somebody's stuck a 15-year contract on the agenda, that is you and the person who buys from you and the person who buys from them all have to service that unfair contract.
Sure. And also bylaws get rubber stamped or changed at the meeting as well. And, you know, we've been to meetings where the bylaws banned pets.
They tried to.
And the lots of pet owners there hadn't kind of realised how important it was going to be. So, yeah, I quite agree. People need to go to those.
You need to read the agenda. You need to go along and see what is being decided. I mean, the pet thing is now history, of course. But, yeah, that was, funnily enough, in our building, that was what brought together a disparate bunch of people who might never have even said hello to each other. And the rest is history. Before we go.
Yes, our regular segment, Lock Up and Leave, because one of the most wonderful things about apartments is leaving them.
For a couple of weeks.
Yeah, that's right.
For a couple of weeks.
So you can go overseas, you can go on holiday anywhere in Australia and just not have to worry about it. So we
have a website.
Website called Mild Rover.
Yep.
And what's the pick of the website this week, Jimmy?
Well, I'm picking a holiday that I was on, a trip that I was on with my friend Kieran Prendeville, who the older Brits who listen to us will remember from shows like That's Life, or because he was the writer of Ballykiss Angel. So people will know Kieran peripherally, at least. So Kieran and I, whenever we can, COVID willing, go on a hike every year to a different place. And this year we went to Northern Provence and hiked from one perched village to another.
Oh, how lovely. Was it lovely?
It's lovely when you're going downhill, not so lovely at the end of the day when you're going back uphill.
Oh, no.
Because these perched villages sit up on rocks, you know, and they're beautiful. They're gorgeous. They're insanely picturesque. And each of the places we went to had a really nice hotel with a really nice restaurant, either in the hotel or nearby. And the food, I mean, it's France, you know, the food's always going to be good, but this food was especially good. And if you go on the Mild Rover website, you will see the most fantastic cheese board ever in the world. I mean, basically, they trundle up and you think, why didn't you tell us about this before you fed us all that other food? Because we could just chomp down on the cheese. The holiday was organized by a company in Britain called On Foot Holidays. Now, I have to say that this one, Kieran and I are both in our 70s. Well, I'm nearly in my 70s. There's a couple of weeks to go. It was quite challenging. It was pretty challenging. And it says on the advertisement, moderate to hard. Well, it was more hard than moderate. But On Foot Holidays do a whole bunch of other hikes in Europe and elsewhere, and you just got to choose your level and not be too ambitious. But that thing of getting up in the morning, you take your bag to the front desk,
and they transport
it to your
And then you just go out on a lovely walk.
You go and have a fabulous breakfast and then waddle out into the sunshine and go for a fabulous walk and work off all the calories you're going to be consuming.
Sounds excellent.
So we ate like troopers for that week, and Kieran managed to lose weight. So he says. So it's good. So it's all there. It's Kieran's story, not mine, and our encounter with Rango the dog, which is quite a nice little story. All right, Sue, that's us.
Fantastic. Well, thanks, Jimmy, and thank you all for listening.
And we'll talk to you
next week.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Flat Chat Wrap podcast. You'll find links to the stories and other references on our website, flatchat.com.au. And if you haven't already done so, you can subscribe to this podcast completely free on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your favourite podcatcher. Just search for Flat Chat Wrap with a W, click on subscribe, and you'll get this podcast every week without even trying. Thanks again. Talk to you again next week.